Current podcast.
Current podcast.
Current podcast. Find us everywhere you listen to podcasts. Now you get to see what it takes to create something for y'all to listen to and watch. I hope y'all appreciate it. Let's get it.
Yo,
appreciate you coming through. It's been a minute. We've been talking about this every session we have.
Absolutely.
I'm glad that now you're meeting my team.
What
this
a privilege.
Is Manny. This is my brother and my cousin and my boy Aries.
Oh, right on. We got family in the house. Yeah, I love that. Like,
yeah, exactly. Family and then long-term friendships and everything. And,
Best way to do it.
It's a beautiful thing, man. Like, pleasure to have you here, bro.
Such a pleasure to be here, man. I'm honored. We've been talking about it for a minute. Sure. So, what's up, everybody?
Let's go. Bro, what? Because...
He already has a shirt. He has a head. Yeah, you got to start with the shirt.
I figured I would.
He got a shirt saying heavy already. So what made you meditate then? Yeah. So what made you want to get into bodybuilding?
It's a great question, man. You know, when I first got into fitness, like a lot of people, I was just frustrated. Was tired. Want to change in my life. And I find that one of the best ways to deal with pain, with frustration, is to bury it under the work. Right?
So have an outlet for it.
Exactly. Have an outlet for it. When you get busy with your hands, your brain stops racing with all that bullshit. You know what I'm saying? We start to focus and channel our energy into something that is productive. Now, productiveness leads to fulfillment. And I started just as someone who I've been teased a lot about my body being overweight and things like that when I was a kid. You know, kids especially are relentless. They're
ruthless. Every little thing they'll nitpick and get you.
Absolutely. They will come after you for everything they can. Your body type, your race, whatever it is. You know, they're particularly insidious. And I knew that in my development, I was going to have a hard time if I let things continually get to my head like that. I'm like, man, people pick on me because of my weight. People pick on me because I'm big. And I was like, I can change that. You know, so I started getting into running and dieting and nutrition, and that kind of led into the love of resistance training. Mm-hmm. I started like anybody else, just get out there and move, just walk, you know, walk laps behind my apartment or whatever it was I could do. And then I discovered weights. And then I was like, man, this is exercise. This don't feel that same. I'm not huffing and puffing. I don't feel like I'm about to rip my hair out at the end of this. My lungs are burning. I'm enjoying this.
Right.
And that's kind of what got me into resistance training and fitness. Now, I wouldn't say I'm too much of a bodybuilder, actually, even though I have like size or whatever. Mm-hmm. My love is for strongman.
So you're like more powerlifter, my bad. Yes. Let me rephrase that for everybody.
That's correct.
He's a powerlifter.
Absolutely. Hence the pop-up belly.
He's a puller,
belly.
Right?
We call us the power belly. Right.
It's more of a tug and pull, right?
With definitely.
So deadlifting.
You know, the easiest way to say it, I love when people word it this way, is that bodybuilders train muscles, powerlifters train the lift. They train movement. And there's a big difference in that.
I'm so glad that you brought that right now.
Exactly, to underscore that.
Like I had said, before you came, I was telling him like, oh, he does bodybuilding and all that. But that's just like, because when you see a gym bro, you be seeing like, that's what you think first, like
absolutely.
A bodybuilder.
Absolutely.
But there's terms and there's terminology.
Exactly. That, there's levels to it. There's a kind of, there's dichotomies everywhere you look. You know, there's differences and separations in the modality of training. How intensely you train affects the adaptation. For example, if you do light weights for high reps, you're looking at something that's a lot more endurance-based. You're going to look a little bit leaner, not so massive. Mm. But if you're doing sort of heavier weights for very intense work, you're not going to get a lot of reps out of it, but you will see a lot of strength.
Facts.
And then you got to eat for that type of
take
lifestyle.
Notes, everybody. Mm-hmm. You're gonna learn a lot from
exactly.
This man right here.
Yeah.
I love it.
I hope y'all are ready, man. Get your brains ready.
So you fall in the gym bro category? Mm-hmm. You lift the 220.
You know what I'm saying?
You bench the 225.
Listen,
you squat the 225. you deadlift the 225.
Look, Manny, every time I see his reels, I'm definitely intimidated. I'm
like, appreciate that, bro.
Shit, man, this guy could toss me across the room if he wanted to.
Oh, exactly. He's a gym bro for sure. Then.
I know, right? Exactly. Actually, the proper title for me is Gym Daddy. You know, we ascended past that bro shit a while ago.
He's like, y'all can stay at bros. He's like, I'm above, man.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, I started to look looking around like, damn, I saw in half these kids. Nah, man, there's something to be said for dedication, you know, for sure.
Nah, because like, I think last week I seen 500.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, God.
Yeah, we pushing some plates.
In deadlift or in bench?
Yeah, on the deadlift. Actually, I think you might have seen the squat because we did squats and deadlifts last week and we had some 500 plus numbers. It was good. We're on our journey, you know, humbly so. And don't get me wrong, you know, you can't ever let this stuff get to your head. I often talk about how strength is a very, it's a very ethereal thing. At what point do you say I am strong? Because there's always someone out there who is stronger than you, who is
better. Fish.
Exactly, always a better fish. I mean, I lift just up the street at a power lifter gym, and there are people there who dwarf my numbers, who just put me to shame.
Really,
world class athletes out there.
There's somebody like, pushing like 700 pounds,
bro. There's a big shout out to a world class squatter, Jesus Olivares, comes out there squatting 900 plus pounds.
What?
Yeah, insane. The best squatter on the planet, probably Jamal Browner, the best deadlifter on the planet, pulling over 1,000 pounds out that pocket, man. Insane. You know, we got all these incredible athletes, so I'm in good graces and very humbled by my crowd. But that's the thing too, you know, if you're the strongest person in the room, you're at the wrong place. The gym I was at before, it very much felt that way.
Got you. It
started feeling like
you needed that competitive edge. Exactly. Like, I need to get to the next level.
Absolutely.
Because if I stay here, I'm not gonna go to the next
I'm not gonna ascend. I got nothing to chase, you know. I'm chasing my own tail in circles. Like, what's going on? Where's the growth?
And you also got to learn new techniques.
Yeah, exactly.
Because since you're the one that knows it all now at that specific place.
Period.
Then you got to go to another place that's going to challenge you.
Period.
But to stop you there right there, because you said I'm going to piggyback off what you're saying. And my cousin's going to love this question. And I noticed your form, bro. Like, how did you get so consistent to just be damn near perfect when you're squatting, when you're deadlifting?
Wow, man. Like, I can't tell you how much that word consistent means to me, because there is this whole, lately it's been a trend on social media as well, is can we lift every rep the same way? If it's 100 pounds, 600 pounds, 1,000 pounds, can you make it look the same? And really, man, it's two things. It is a mental discipline. You have to have a mind-body connection. Understanding movement does a lot. It gives you, we all have bodies, but there are people who are better at using their body for various tasks than others. Hence athletes, right? A sprinter is probably much better at using their hips, their calves, their extensor muscles than you and I are, right? When it comes to bolting down a track, we look at Usain Bolt, his stride length, his power is tremendous. In fact, actually very interesting little tidbit about Usain Bolt. They were looking into what makes this man so successful. And what they figured, because if you look at Usain Bolt next to his competition, he's big. Right. He's big. He's a lot more muscular than a lot of the people he's running against. Mm-hmm. And the thinking was, well, maybe he's got incredible stride length. There are two terms that dictate the rate at which you can sprint. There's a little bit more to it, but these two major terms, and they are stride rate and stride length. Stride length is how much distance do you cover every time you take a stride.
Right.
And stride rate is how often do you take a stride. And they found actually Usain Bolt's stride length and rate were pretty average, which is kind of odd. But what they found is my man was doing a ton of power against the ground whenever he would run. When he'd sprint, he was hitting the ground very intensely, propelling him forward. This is a discipline in movement. This is an awareness of understanding how to manipulate forces in your body. I always tell people, your body speaks a language. And these languages that it goes into are biomechanics, kinesiology, kinematics, and kinetics. Kinetics are the forces that move you. Kinematics are the actual movement through time space. And it's fascinating because the more you understand these things, the more you can tune that into strength, endurance, functionality, or whatever you want.
Facts.
And when you started working out, that's what you started studying and looking at?
Absolutely. After
was that more than just the workout? Like, you started getting more into the range of motion? Because you know every workout has a range of motion. So absolutely. You started looking at the range of motion of every one of them?
Absolutely. You know, I think if there's something that's both a blessing and a curse for me, it's I tunnel vision very hard. I get very focused on things that I'm doing. And when you're doing that as a lifter who doesn't really know what he's doing, you start asking a ton of questions. How many reps should I do? How heavy should I go? How long of a rest should I take? And then someone gives this a name, and those things are called acute variables. And then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, there's a science to this. This is really neat. That to me lit a fire that just would not go away.
How old were you when you figured that out?
I was 20, maybe about 19, actually. Yeah, so I was quite young.
Dang, so it's been a journey from...
Absolutely.
That's why you're so knowledgeable, because every Wednesday you blow my mind with the stuff that you tell me. I'm like, damn, and it makes sense, too. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like...
Thank you for saying
that. Then when you tell me your background... It's just something else where it's like,
ooh. I appreciate that, you know, and yeah, it really is. It's a labor of love. You got to fall in love with the movement and all that stuff. And I guess, you know, the thing was bodies made sense to me. When I started studying biomechanics and kinesiology, it just started making sense.
So just to ask you a question, what's a workout, like a common workout that you see that most people do mistakes on?
Oh my goodness.
On their range of motion.
That's a great question. Right. Let's talk about the squat, because a lot of people love squats, right? Like it's
girls love it to get that ass.
Absolutely.
Guys don't want to have chicken legs.
Exactly, right? It's become the new obsession. Right. You look at TikTok, Squat University, all these big viral pages that are talking about the squat. Of course, a number of different techniques I could go into, or different numbers of lifts that I could break down, but the squat feels right because there's a lot of myths surrounding it. So when I see the squat, one of the things people constantly get lambasted about is depth. Oh, you didn't hit depth. You didn't hit depth. That doesn't count. But
ass didn't hit the ground.
Exactly. Yeah, you didn't go ass to grass, so
or
it don't
count.
Or your
ass didn't clinch enough. These guys always ask that.
Exactly.
Your ass, like, you're not,
unless you squat low enough to pick Skittles up with your asshole off the floor, you ain't going low enough, Papa.
See, I told you I was supposed to do it like that. Over here trying to have my bubble.
Yeah, that's out. Right.
Paul. Pause. Before I say anything else, pause.
I was like, taste the rainbow, motherfucker. No, I'm just kidding. That's the thing. There's this obsession with perfection rather than the journey, rather than getting there. When you asked earlier, how did you get so consistent? I got consistent by recognizing and performing bad technique, realizing the errors and then eliminating them, weeding them out, and slowly refining and sharpening the saw to find what actually is good technique. Now, when you look at something like a squat, there's a lot of like, oh, you should do this way. Man, if I had a dollar for every time, especially before I became like more of a professional power lifter and doing what I did, not a professional power lifter, but a professional fitness individual who is doing power lifting, people used to come up to me all the time when I was smaller and be like, yo, bro, can I give you a tip? And what they always say for some reason is, why don't you squat wider? You got to squat wider, take it wide. Because that's what they see NFL athletes do. That's what they see strongmen doing who may have limited hip mobility and stuff. They're not looking at the functionality of it. So depth is a really big common hangup. Mm-hmm. But there are these things called long range partials, which is where you go down into the end range of an exercise. So typically, I should say, where the muscle is at its lengthened position, which is actually typically the beginning of the exercise. So in a squat, it would be at your descent. And then if you start at the descent and you go halfway up and then back down, halfway up and then back down, someone might say, oh, those are half reps. But an educated person would look at that and say, oh, maybe he's training progressive overload for long range partials. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. People love to come up and flex their knowledge in the gym. Hey, can I give you a tip? Yo, bro, can I show you a better way of doing that? Trainers do this all the time as well. In fact, any trainer that I've had, so I spent 7 years working at a National Academy of Sports Medicine partner school, teaching people how to become trainers, or trainers how to become advanced trainers. Mm. And one of the things I would always tell them, if I have one philosophy in fitness, it is do not give people unsolicited advice. When you go up to someone, you just start telling them about themselves, about like, yo, man, let me tell you how to make your life better. They're gonna be, who the fuck is this guy?
I started learning about like asking permission.
Yep.
Yes. That's a beautiful thing to say, right?
Can
there.
Can I tell you this?
Can I tell? Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Can I just
you tell
inform?
Me no?
Say it
then.
In corporate, absolutely.
Bro. Just
yeah.
Say it in the corporate, most corporate way that you can.
Absolutely. So when I'll say it this way, even let's say that's a great point. So how would I educate my students to approach? Because some people need advice. Lord right. knows. You see some people and they're like,
I'm
you don't
blunt, so I might say some asshole shit. Real quick.
And I tell you what, some people receive that well. There are some people out there who go to the gym like, boy, I hope somebody tells me what I need to do.
Right.
Right? Because they just want to get to the result. But unfortunately, we live in a world of very fragile egos.
Facts.
When do we get to that point, I wonder?
I think in the 2010s. I'm just kidding.
And so it's like, let me tell you the date. Let me tell you. It's like,
that time,
this was the event that triggered
it. I think Kanye West went up to Taylor Swift and like, yeah.
Why did you do that to her? You know, it comes down to building rapport. You are more likely to take advice from people you respect or have a connection with, right? So if you begin just by telling people something nice, right? Just saying like, yo, I see you in here. Exactly. Compliment them first. Get to know. When I usually try to give advice to somebody, I don't give advice on the first meetup. Mm-hmm. In fact, even the National Academy of Sports Medicine says, resist the temptation to educate on the first meeting. It's tempting. You want to tell people like, oh my God.
You're talking about you're like gonna on the first training session.
On the first, you're going to overload them basically.
Exactly.
You got to, what he's saying is you got to build the trust first because without
that rapport. Building, right?
Rapport.
Yeah,
build that rapport. Build that and trust. You probably see that same thing in your industry, right? You have to build a connection before you can really paint like an artist, right? Yes. Before you really, they hand the reins over to you.
Exactly. Be like, I trust you now. Do whatever you want.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then it's the same thing with the type of work that I do in personal training or corrective exercise. I have to earn their trust. And one of the easiest ways to do that is to get to know the person, right? Forget about like whenever I sit down with somebody and I'm onboarding them as a client. Back when I used to do like actual fitness training, now I only do corrective X, right, as you know. Mm-hmm. But back when I was more of a general fitness trainer, I would usually tell, so what are you here for today? Well, tell me a little bit about what you want. And actually, you know what? Hold off a second. Tell me a little bit about you first. Like, give me the cliff notes on Joey. Like, who are you? What do you like to do? What's your favorite color? What movies you like? That kind of thing. Dope. Let's connect. And then once they're in a place of nodding their head, listening, receiving, then we can talk about things that might actually have to involve change, right? Can't just go up to strangers and tell them to change. Who are you? Don't tell me my business, exactly. Right? So yeah, on the first encounter, you typically resist the temptation to educate, get to know them. On the second one, then you ask, what are you working on? Squats. Oh, you're working on squats. You mind if I watch your technique for it and see what we can pick up, right? That sort of thing. And if you're a professional, they might be like, yeah, why not? I could use a second opinion. I could use a spotter. Mm-hmm. Why not? Offer to spot them. That's a great way to get to know someone better. Here's an interesting thought. Experience, time spent in the gym is not congruent to the way time spent in other fields leads to expertise. Let me word it this way. Mm-hmm. If you want to learn survival, if you want to get better at outdoorsmanship, right? Braving harsh tundras and arid deserts, how do you go about doing that?
You got to get your
ass outside. You take your ass outside. Exactly. You got to get experience, right? Mm-hmm. And typically, you probably won't just read it in books. You want to find someone who's going to be an outdoor guide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you want to find someone
that's like a mentor.
Done it before.
Say it. Exactly. Yeah, someone who's been there. Been there, done that. Exactly. Someone who has braved these barren deserts. Someone who has braved these harsh tundras and maybe made mistakes out there that almost got them killed so that they can share that with you and you learn. Wow, what can I extrapolate from this so that doesn't happen to me?
Right.
That's not true in the gym, necessarily. Experience is a great guide and teacher. But I often find that people who come up and give unsolicited advice, they're the kind of people who be like, yo, man, you know, just listen, take it from me, bro. I've been lifting for 18 years. I've torn my labrum like 6 times. I've had 4 rotator cuff injuries, threw my back out 3 times. I don't want to learn from someone, who's got a history marred in injury. You see what I'm saying? It's like trying to learn how to drive a car
from someone who's got they've crashed 10 times.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
take
bro,
it from me.
Exactly. I understand you've been on the road 40 damn years.
Get off the road, buddy.
I don't want to learn from someone who has 2 car crashes a year, right? That experience is not congruent in this arena as it is in other arenas. So I often tell people, be cautious because coachability and coaching are 2 separate skills. One of the hardest fights I fight, along with many other educators in sports medicine, is that it's not the best body in the room who is the most knowledgeable. It is the individual who has done the most research, who has experience guiding and learning from others, who has spent time in the arena, but has done so with precision and care. The quality of your experience is outstandingly important in fitness as opposed to many other arenas.
Question. Where did it go from you from? I mean, I know you started the whole thing from educating yourself at 19 and starting that journey, but where did it go from you from training to now like corrective work and educating people? Because I know if you're educating me on my range of motion, on how my posture, I'm sure you do that with every client. So where did it go into like, where did that click into you that I need to stop training people and not more correct their posture and, you know.
Thank you so much for that question, because that, I think it's an important road in my journey that really transformed or elevated my game. Because I'll be honest, the first 2 years I was training, I was a horrible trainer. I would not have hired myself. I can be candid about that, because now I believe that I know something that's worth a damn.
Right.
You know, and like now I would hire myself. I pray every night, like, damn, if I could clone myself and do the deep tissue work I do on y'all, right. Damn, that would be great, you know?
Sure.
It came from when I had to do my first research. So when you certify through NASM, the National Academy of Sports Medicine, every 2 years you have to recertify and you have to do continuing education. Every 2 years.
Yeah, barbering, you just got to reapply and you get the license again. I think after a certain age, they make you retest.
I see. After a certain amount of time spent
exactly,
in there.
Like,
yeah.
Dang, every 2 years. You have to recertify every 2 years.
Exactly. Continuing education.
So is that like.
Yeah, it's because new research has come out and new techniques have came out.
Yeah.
So now you gotta learn those new ways of doing stuff or whatever the science
is. Is there any possibility that you have to unlearn something that in the past was like,
yeah,
like
many times.
Quo?
I have eaten my own words.
Wow.
Many times. I always tell people, often what I share with you guys, my clients, and also with my students, is not necessarily my opinion. In fact, the majority of what I share is what the evidence is. Mm. It's just evidence reviews.
No, you're very fact-based.
Absolutely. And if tomorrow the evidence changes, you know, it's never an overnight shift. It's usually a very gradual shift toward a different direction.
Yeah, but it takes a few years.
Yes, exactly. And when that evidence shifts, you better believe my lingo is going to shift. Otherwise, I'm going to be a dinosaur. I'm going to be preaching outdated information.
Right.
I mean, think about nutrition. Just, you know, barely 15 years ago, everybody was telling you egg yolks are horrible. Throw them all out. Steak is terrible. Don't eat any red meat. This is awful for you. And carbs are the worst thing. And that still kind of exists. You know, people are still trying to demonize carbs.
And now they're like, you need it.
Absolutely.
I keep now hearing like, weed is good and now weed is bad. Weed is good.
Right,
weed
exactly.
is bad. I'm
all
like,
these things.
Bruh.
Yeah. You see that sort of strange undulating paradigm that happens in nutrition where this back and forth effect of this is good for you, bad for you, good for you, bad for you.
Right.
Some of that is marketing and sensationalism, yeah. You know?
Like lobby, OJ.
They lobby yeah. it.
Having the OJ for breakfast
yeah,
and then learning yeah. citrus is not good for you in the morning like that.
Sugar in the morning, exactly. Is it good for you?
I take
you?
It from Wiz Khalifa, OJ, cushion OJ every morning and keeps the doctor.
I love so. That. There you go, bro. Exactly. And here's the thing, you know, if there is one truth that has prevailed throughout the decades, it's that everything in moderation. This is
Facts.
An ultimate truth, right?
There
is your body seeks homeostasis. It seeks balance. And so does nature, for that matter, without getting too out of our own league and getting too, you know, hippy dippy about it, kumbaya, but nature
no,
seeks
balance.
No, we
definitely can.
Yeah, exactly. Why not, right? I'm in good company. No kidding. But yeah, nature seeks balance. So the idea is that if you do like red meat, you can have red meat. It's just a matter of balancing those things.
That's what Kim told us, though. I believe what Kim told us, too, man. She said we could eat whatever we want.
Underscore.
Your body doesn't distinguish what steak and Skittles is.
She's a nutritionist, and she kind of gave us
cool.
She gave us a breakdown.
Every day for me.
Because she was telling us how, like, someone can eat McDonald's every day, but if they're not eating it like huge amount of portions, they can lose weight just because you're being consistent on what they're giving their body. She's like, in the long run, it might not be the most healthiest thing to just be eating McDonald's.
For your arteries?
Yeah.
However, because you're being consistent, your body will lose weight because of it.
Beautifully said.
Yeah.
Beautifully
so she was giving us that example. She was telling us, like, you just got to be balanced on what you're eating. And knowing your relationship with food, because a lot of people, a lot of nutritionists try to make people eat things that they don't love.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then she was saying how, like, your relationship with food matters. So
yeah.
You have to figure out what it is you're allergic to. You have to figure out what is it that you really love.
Absolutely.
And then build something off that.
Absolutely. You know, what you just said is such an important
she
punctuation.
Calls it a food sensitivity test.
Yeah, you know, eating the right things for your lifestyle and your wellness is critically important. And we can get into a lot of the things that compose hunger and appetite. Those are two separate things.
Go for it.
Yeah, and you know, one of the so when it comes to eating habits, there are perhaps four major components we have to balance. Those are hunger, appetite, satiety, and satiation. Hunger is the biological need for food that energy to keep you functioning, surviving. Mm-hmm. Appetite is the psychological desire for food, that want for food.
That random thought, exactly. I want this.
A craving for something, craving. That sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Even though you may be very well satiated. Mm-hmm. So it's a great example of this for our listeners may be, imagine you're going out to dinner and you have this big old dinner of steak and potatoes. And you're going to town and you're eating and like, oh my God, this is so much. If I eat another bite, I'm going to pop. I can't do this. This is amazing. But I'm full. So then the server comes over and says, can I get you a box for that? By the way, we just had some fresh apple fritters come out the oven. And all of a sudden now you're like, oh man, apple fritters, that sweetness would hit maybe with a scoop of ice cream. And now you're thinking texture differences, temperature differences. And your brain is like, damn, I could fuck with that. You know? And now all of a sudden, even though
you're full,
you're hypocritical ass. You know what I tell my son?
I tell my son all the time, stop, but you're just eating because you're bored.
Exactly. Oh boy. And I'm a boredom eater. I'll tell you what, I am a boredom eater. I put on a TV show, I gotta be munching on something, you know, even though I'm fine. Like I just ate, I'm full, whatever. But that is appetite. The difference, the distinction between appetite and hunger are really important to recognize.
Damn, I guess I have shitty appetite.
Definitely. Many of us do. And it's what compels us to overeat is appetite rather than hunger. But that's the thing. Hunger and obesity are complicated. You know, obesity often gets a bad rap as, oh, you just got poor discipline. You just eat too much. That's your problem. But obesity is extremely complex in cause.
Right.
There is a socioeconomic factor to obesity. There is a genetic factor to obesity. There is a cultural factor to obesity. Physiological factors, the endocrinological factors. There are numbers of things that go into obesity. But we as society often adjudicate rather harshly. We're very judgmental.
Right.
Right. We tend to just see people and be like, oh, they got bad choices.
Compartmentalize it.
Exactly. Yeah. The brain loves to compartmentalize. It's the only way it can deal with all the information overload we live in today.
Can't say that word, man.
It's a difficult word to say.
It's just so many syllables to break down that I'm like, oh, my ADHD does not compel me.
Just got to be like, our brains like to put things in a box.
Yeah.
No, exactly. I just use a definition now because I'm like, I'm going to stop looking like I know what I'm saying. Even though I know what I'm saying, I just can't say the fucking word. But yeah, carry on, my bad.
Absolutely. So that's hunger and appetite. And then you have satiety and satiation. Satiety is, well, let's start with satiation. Satiation is that feeling of fullness, that moment of like, oh, there it is. I'm full. I can't eat another
bite. Happens to me quick.
Exactly. And for some people, it happens very quickly. And for others, it doesn't happen, right? Or it happens very, very briefly, which ties into that last word, satiety. Satiety is the feeling of fullness between meals. So those who have good satiety tend to have less hunger pangs and cravings or appetite dysfunction that leads them to overeat.
Question, just because you were talking about that, right? The fullness.
Yeah.
Why is it that sometimes, like, for example, you have rice with your meal, you feel full. I know it's carbs.
Yeah.
But then say you take that out, but you eat more veggies or you add more protein, but you don't get that same sensation.
Terrific question. That is an outstanding question. So the content of your food will have different effects on satiety. Protein and fibrous foods have a much higher duration of satiety. So protein takes longer to break down in your stomach. It has to go through a process called deamination, whereby amino groups are stripped out. This takes time and occupies space in your stomach, therefore not sending that signal of, I'm hungry, my stomach's empty, again until later. Whereas simpler carbs like sugars will be rapidly absorbed. They're much more easy to break down and utilize for energy, which can be a good thing. Sugar is instant energy. If you're an athlete who hasn't eaten much all day and you're about to go kill it in the gym, you need sugar, right? Oh, sugar is not a blanket enemy.
Random question.
Please.
Is that why some, whether they be bodybuilders or powerlifters, tend to have candy while doing their reps, in between reps?
Me too. Yeah.
That go like gummies,
absolutely,
or something.
Yeah, it's so funny. You know, I stream my workouts on Twitch, and oftentimes my viewers be like, bro, you eating candy in the gym? I'm like, well, first day in the gym, Papa, you ain't never seen someone eating candy in the That's how it goes in a powerlifter's world. We need sugar to energize our next set. You know, not all forms
I'm
of training.
I'm going to go in there with fucking now-laters now, man. Fuck yeah.
Going back to that whole thing.
That's crazy, though, because you're supplementing one one thing, but then again, your dentist is gonna hate it, man.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I thought about that exact as I said that too. So
right, as soon as I was about to say, yeah, I'm gonna take my favorite can, I was like, man, but I just had like the other, I think like a year or two ago, I had six cavities taken out. I'm like, I don't want to go through that.
But what I feel, what if you brushing your teeth like twice a day? You should be fine for flossing. You know?
But the way that the way that my dentist put it, it's like after you eat candy like that, like you want to brush your teeth immediately because that it starts to break down your enamel and all that. I'm like,
oh. Exactly. Yeah, my understanding is, and I'm not a dentist, but my understanding is that it's not actually the sugar that's harmful. It's the breakdown of those sugars by the bacteria that it's in the mouth that is harmful. So when you break and disrupt that bacteria by brushing your teeth and flossing or using mouthwash, then you don't run that same risk or it's significantly reduced.
But like, isn't there like a healthier switcheroo? Like instead of candy, I see like a lot of people take honey.
Yes,
and
totally.
Honey is like
they
a good...
Honey. Absolutely. Yeah, there are glucose packs, like little gel tabs you can take that are just straight sugar. Yeah, there are healthier sort of...
Tell me there's like there's people looking like Winnie the Pooh in the gym, like eating honey.
So would you be
that's crazy.
Would you be opposed to people taking the Celsius
honey jar?
Bro, that's what I imagine right now.
Exactly what I thought too. I just saw that in my head too.
And then it doesn't help, man. You're wearing a red sweater right now.
So question.
You're just like, give me a minute, I'm preparing myself.
Right.
He's like, Oh brother.
That's me in the gym. I'd be out there with like a little red t-shirt, belly out like Winnie the Pooh with a pot of honey. Like, damn, this shit kind of good, man. Between sets. Nah, man.
But question, like, would it mean that? Because Celsius has a lot of sugar in it.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
But is it really that? Because I'm seeing it all over like IG since I came back from El Salvador that like it's bad for you. It has all these other artificial flavors that they say that it doesn't have, but it does have. So I'm like, why do people continue to take some shit like that?
Absolutely. So that's where choice comes in consumerism, right? I mean, you look at even something like
branding, like they just fucking put it in your face. And
absolutely,
just...
man. The FDA has constantly failed us, constantly in protecting us. They are not. They don't do a great job of prevention. They are very reactionary. The FDA and the FTC, the FTC is responsible for the truthfulness of advertising, and the FDA is responsible more for the safety of drugs and food consumption. Supplements are a great sort of gray area. Mm-hmm. I don't know if y'all know this, but there is no formal pre-market review for supplements before they hit the shelves.
And they even tell you on the bottle, like, not FDA approved. Exactly. Like, it'll tell you there.
These statements are not evaluated by the FDA. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Is that because they don't have enough lobbying behind those supplements or products that they're not like here? Because a lot of stuff is lobbied to get to the FDA. That's why they have the money backing, you know?
You got it. Yeah, it's basically that scenario that the supplement companies have a ton of money going into lobbying to allow things to remain as lax as they are. I mean, you look at Europe and Australia, they have banned tons of food additives that are allowed in the United States and the foods we eat.
I hear every damn thing we got here. Like, yeah, you can eat it. And
absolutely.
You can't get the same candy. You can't get the same chips.
Like. Absolutely. Yeah. It's so going back to that whole thing of aren't there healthier alternatives to eat in the gym? There certainly are. Things that have less added. I mean, sugar is sugar. Whether you eat it from a Skittles or whether you take it from a teaspoon of sugar, your body processes sugar as glucose, right? And ultimately, in some ways, everything is converted to glucose one way or another at some point. So the end result is similar, but it's kind of like we said earlier too when you were talking about what you eat and
what
losing
makes
weight.
One makes you feel full and one makes you feel
exactly mild. Exactly. There's more to it than just the weight loss and weight gain aspect. You have to look at your triglycerides, your cholesterol levels, your sodium levels, right? I mean, there's a ton of things in your blood panel that also dictate the quality of your nutrition, or vice versa. The quality of your nutrition dictates the wellness of your blood panel.
Right.
And if you eat junk, sure, you might be able to lose weight on junk. You know, I always used to say to my students, just as a really silly way, I was like, y'all can lose weight eating nothing but Twinkies and cocaine. And I don't know why you'd want to eat cocaine, but God bless it, if you wanted to, you could, right? And if no matter how many calories you are consuming, as long as it's a deficit from the total amount of calories you burn, you will lose weight. But there is more to it than just the weight loss. Is your heart healthy? Are your kidneys healthy? Is your liver healthy? Right? And I mean, the foods we eat can affect our thyroid, can affect so many different things about our wellness. So it's a lot more than just the laws of thermodynamics. But Let's underscore those laws of thermodynamics. Energy is neither created nor destroyed, right? And it ultimately comes down to energy in versus energy out. Mm-hmm. What you eat and gaining weight and losing weight is entirely contingent on calorimetry, not carbohydrates, fat, and protein individually, but the number of calories that they have. 1 gram of carbs and protein has 4 calories per gram. 1 gram of fat has 9 calories, and alcohol, FYI, has 7. So 4, 4, 9, 7. Protein, carb, fat, alcohol. So depending on your intake, right? I mean, or rather, let me say it this way. You can eat whatever you want, but if you burn 2,000 calories a day, that's called your total daily energy expenditure. It's a product of what's called your basal metabolic rate, which is the amount of calories it takes to keep you alive, plus your thermic effect of physical activity. What do you do during the day? That's actually physical activity, right? And then there's also something called NEAT, non-exercise induced activity thermogenesis, which is movement that's not exercise, but just movement in general, going up and down the stairs at work between,
that's,
you know,
going to burn some fat.
Exactly. Yeah, walking to your car as you're leaving the mall, that kind of stuff.
Sex.
Know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Although that could be good exercise, right?
if you do it for long enough. For those minute men out there. You know. Hey, man, there's a lot of them out there, buddy.
That's true. For some people, it's more high-intensity interval training, you know, where it's 10 minutes or less. For other people, it's steady state, baby. We in there.
Yeah. Let's go.
No, that's very
3-0,
true.
3-0, baby. 3-0.
Right? So it all comes down to how many calories you burn in a day. If you are eating less than what you burn, you will lose weight. If you are eating more than what you burn, you will gain weight. And no matter who you are, this is true. This is true of a low-carbohydrate, high-carbohydrate diet. It doesn't matter.
So even if someone doesn't eat a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they don't do any type of exercise, weight gain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because you're not burning nothing. You're
exactly.
Just gaining.
Absolutely. If you are in a caloric surplus, you will gain weight.
So if you cut down on the eating and then you start exercising, you're obviously going to lose weight.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Absolutely. So there are a number of ways to achieve a deficit. Right. You can eat less, you can move more, or you can do a combination of both.
But then what about those that say, oh, but if you're in the gym, you should actually eat more?
Right. So that is true. Being activity burns calories,
right?
Because
you need energy to come back in so you can sustain yourself. Like
absolutely.
You said,
exactly.
Metabolic, what's
that
it called?
That term, TEPA, again, right? Oh, that TEPA. Thermic effect of physical activity, right? So how many calories you burn during exercise, right? So ultimately...
No, I'm talking about the one that keeps you alive. What's that one called?
Oh, the basal metabolic rate.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
that's
great question. Yeah, so there are a whole different bunch of terms. BMR, basal metabolic rate, RMR, your resting metabolic rate, which is just a tick above your basal. Your basal is how many it takes to keep your organs functioning, right? So if you were basically in a vegetative state, how much would it take to just keep you going? That's that number of calories. So it's the lowest number. RMR is like, you know, you're chilling on your couch, you just smoked a fat blunt, you're watching Netflix, that kind of thing.
Right.
Just vegging out, resting. And then TEPA, the thermic effect of physical activity. And then if you take, there's also another one called the thermic effect of food. One of the things we don't give credit for is that it actually takes calories to digest.
Right.
Digestion is a physical and physiological process that requires energy expenditure.
Mm-hmm.
So when you consume calories, it actually takes calories to get calories, right? And protein has a larger thermic effect of food. So you burn more calories eating protein than something like sugar, which is easier to process again. So the product of TEPA plus RMR plus the thermic effect of food is your total daily energy expenditure. And if you subtract typically 300 to 500 calories from whatever your TDEE is, that is the number you want to aim for to lose weight. But if you're working out really hard, then in that case, you're now burning a ton of calories and creating too large of a deficit. You guys may have heard this term before. It's called adaptive thermogenesis. Even if you're not familiar with the term, you've probably heard the definition, which is plateauing, right? Mm. Where your body, because you're no longer eating much, you know, they say, oh, if you don't eat, your metabolism slows. Mm. And if you eat a ton, your metabolism speeds up. There is some truth to this. This is called adaptive thermogenesis.
So then that's where you're no longer going to lose weight.
Yeah. If you create a huge deficit for a very long period of time and you may lose weight rapidly in the beginning, but eventually what's going to happen is, again, going back to what we said earlier, your body seeks balance, homeostasis. Eventually it's going to be like, wait a minute, we are losing way too much fat. We need this for survival, right? And that's the thing, man. We are in a culture of being inundated with perfect bodies. We constantly see bikini models and bodybuilders who are stage ready. And that's not feasible to maintain year round. Even these athletes are not maintaining these physiques year round.
Yeah, we judge Patty Pimblett so much because he's in fight camp and he looks chiseled up. As soon as he leaves the fight camp, he gets fat again. And it's
absolutely.
Like, yeah, you're right. We should stop judging Patty Pimblett.
Absolutely.
Because if you see like when fighters fight after the fight, there's like always like a junk food around them, like a slice
for
of
sure.
pizza.
I mean,
or like,
yes. been so
like a burger
for that
that's like all greased up. And shit
absolutely.
Like that.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's a very real thing. And let's be real as well about this. That junk food, quote unquote, is honestly, it's very rich with nutrients. I'm not saying the great kinds of nutrients. I mean, sodium is a nutrient. Fat is a nutrient. So it's very rich with energy, and athletes need these types of calorically dense foods to some degree, depending on what they're doing, especially if they're at dangerously low TDEEs to cut weight. Then they need something to rebound, right?
Because that pizza slice.
Exactly, exactly.
There was this thing about a couple weeks ago, this fighter to cut weight drinks wine. What do you think about that?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, now, to cut you know, weight, he'd be drinking wine.
That's like, very interesting. I've heard some people talk about this before, and you know, we could. There are benefits to drinking, you know, that whole glass of red wine a day, that sort of thing. How that's good for your brain, your digestive health, your depression levels.
Clears the arteries.
Exactly, you know, heart health and stuff like that. You know, phytonutrients from you know these grapes
I don't drink
and
wine,
stuff.
But I just saw that he became the champion like that, and I was like, oh shit,
yeah, exactly,
it must be working.
And here's the thing, you know, a lot of people. There are people who even claim like you know. Juan Manuel Marquez used to drink his own pee. You know what I'm saying? Exactly. And, exactly. Yeah. Much to the chagrin of many of his fans.
You can only do that once. I heard that. No good.
I've heard all kinds of crazy stuff about people drinking this, that, and the third to help them with one end and one goal. But I'll say this, placebo is a powerful thing, right? The power of suggestion matters a lot. Diseases have been cured by phony pills when people believe that it will fix them, right?
Because their body begins to believe.
I forgot what movie it was. This is the movie I was seeing.
It's crazy.
Inception, man.
I wasn't even watching it. It was just these clips on Instagram, but it was about this fighter that like he's training with... he's this one kung fu guy that he's very something Knight, I think his name is. Mm-hmm. Point is that in the fight, like he thought that he had been taking steroids, and the guy told him like, "No, it was just a placebo, like just to like make him think that." And the whole time he was training hard and actually building muscle and all that type of stuff.
Here's the thing, man. Placebo effect cannot be understated.
That's why they have it in science.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, this is why we go to extraordinary efforts to rule out placebo, right? To try and do things like, you know, you have different tiers, categories of evidence. The very bottom tier is what's called anecdotal evidence. Now, let me make this clear. The tiers of evidence are not necessarily about truth. They're about reliability. Reliability is how likely is this result to replicate across different populations. So anecdotes are not very reliable is the problem. And then at the very top, you have what are called research reviews or academic reviews and meta-analyses, which is a review of all the available data. So placebo is one of those things that pervades all tiers of evidence, right? And some more than others. You have double-blind studies, you know, in which placebo can very easily be separated from the actual control groups or the experimental group. Yeah. Then you have quasi-experimental, where they're kind of told, like, hey, you might get a sugar pill, you might get a real pill, that kind of thing. But my point being, there are even conditions where women will exhibit symptoms of pregnancy because they want to be pregnant so badly. This is a real thing without sexual intercourse even happening, and they'll display
the immaculate conception. You're saying
that's how powerful our brain is, right? The power of suggestion. I mean, here's another great example.
So they have morning sickness and shit.
Yeah, totally. They'll get a pregnant belly and everything. They will lactate. All these things. So hormonal changes.
Well, it's not the beer.
Emulate that very closely, if not identically, emulate pregnancy. It's fascinating to give you guys.
Then you give them a blood test and you're like, "Sorry, ma'am, you're not pregnant."
Exactly. Yeah, they'll do an ultrasound and be like, "Whoa,
you need to fart." You need to fart.
Now, I'm not saying that these are very common things right. You know, but they do happen in exceptionally rare cases. But let's talk about where mentality and mindset really help to break boundaries.
Yeah, because even when like something you tell me in the sessions we have all the time are connect the mind and body.
Yes.
And then you say something about stretch the leg.
Yeah.
And every time I do that, when I connect the mind and body.
Yeah. And I feel you
yeah,
do that.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. There is so a like, physical elaborate thing. On that.
Absolutely. So coming kind of full circle to that point, your belief matters a lot. And your connection to what your body can do is really important. Eddie Hall, who is the 2017 World's Strongest Man, deadlifted 500 kilograms, a little over 1,100 pounds, the half-ton deadlift, which was insane. He was the first person in history to deadlift that. And no one has done that since. Until the point that he did that. But since he did it...
Now they're breaking that shit.
Four people have done it. I believe it's four, right? We had Thor, we had Ivan Makarov, I believe, and Jamal Browner. So now you see these...
Because they knew it was possible.
Exactly.
The power of suggestion. If he could do it, I could do it.
Absolutely. When someone sees it's possible, now all of a sudden... It becomes possible. This isn't the first time, nor will it be the last that this happens in history. The same thing happened. I forget what the timing was, but there was an athlete who wanted to break a certain timing on a mile. Let's say it was 4 minutes. He wanted to run under, you know what I'm talking about? Exactly. Below a 4 minute mile.
Now everybody's just blowing by that.
Blowing it away. Now it's because, now it's like, oh yeah, any like exceptionally elite sprinter can break a 4 minute.
As soon as you, as long as you train to meet that time.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're going to blow it out
exactly.
the water.
You have to believe it's possible, right? If you keep going to a deadlift or a sprinting event thinking like, oh, that's the limit. That's the limit of the human body. So be it. That same thing applies to tension, imbalance, and poor posture. One of the things that pervades our society are musculoskeletal imbalances. All of us, so for example, upper cross syndrome and lower cross syndrome. Stop me when this sounds familiar in your own posture. Upper cross syndrome is rounded shoulders and forward headedness. This classic tech neck, right? We're pretty much all doing it right now, right? Mm-hmm. Our shoulders are sitting in this sort of caved in position.
As soon as you did it, I was like, oh, fuck.
Exactly, right?
I'm in that position.
In that position right now that contributes to all of these dysfunctions, right?
Is it the chairs that that they designed?
It's a big part of it. Yeah, our ergonomics are actually contributing to these postural distortion patterns. They are making chairs and situations that actually make it comfortable for us to sit the wrong way. Mm. Now, here's where the lines get a little blurred. Some people will say that there is no such thing as good posture. There is only repetitive stress. If you spend too long sitting like this, this too will become compensation after a while because you'll be stiff as a board sitting like this all the time. Right. So you'll have a hard time looking at your cell phone like this.
We had to be water, my friend.
Absolutely. Wow. Brilliantly said. Yeah. To quote the GOAT, right? Exactly.
I mean, that came to mind.
Well said. Yeah. You do. You have to keep your body moving, dynamic, those types of things. And fluidity matters.
You say that all the time on our show.
How often do exactly?
I know somewhere in that encyclopedia of your mind.
Absolutely.
Biwata, my friend, is in there too.
Something well said. I blow a chef's kiss to that one. That's a really good way to kind of approach movement and static patterns. So there is this phenomenon known as Davis's Law. Davis's Law says that muscles and soft tissue will remodel along lines of chronic stress. So if you are placing inimical stress, bad stress on your body, i.e. sitting the same way, while, maybe you're an Uber driver, right? You do that for a living and you're really, really hustling. You're driving 10 hours a day, beating those streets, and you're sitting there like this all day. Your muscles will actually maladaptively, and you can hear that word maladaptive, like in Spanish, mog, right? Yeah. Right? Exactly. So it's a maladaptation. So this maladaptation happens to contribute to poor posture. Your body will actually rebuild structures shorter to make it easier for your ass to sit like this, right? Thinking it's helping you.
That's literally
it's
what
reorganizing.
That's literally
itself.
What he beats me up every Wednesday about.
Absolutely.
Like my body's has been stuck in a certain stance or posture.
Absolutely.
My shoulder was fucked up, you know, just to go into kind of like my personal experience.
Yes,
with
please.
You. And it sounds familiar what you're saying because.
Yeah.
You were explaining this to me when you were like taking knots in my shoulder out.
Absolutely.
You were taking knots in my hip out. Like absolutely. That you were like, and then it's been what, 9 weeks, 8 weeks?
Yeah,
like
roughly that, right? About that long.
So
yeah.
To see the progression, it's like, How did you even get to the point where like you were teaching it, bro?
Yeah.
To now you're like, all right, bro, I need to get back in the field to help people. Because if you would have never have stopped teaching, I probably would have never have met you.
Oh, wow, man. You're very right about that. Because I was teaching full time.
Shout out to Bruno, by the way.
Yes, exactly. Shout out to our boy, Bruno. For connecting us. And you're right. Like, had I been in teaching this whole time, I would not have had the privilege to work with the people that I now get to work with.
Right.
And I realize that this kind of goes back. We're jumping a lot all over the place to when you ask, like, what took me from, you know, like, basically general training to corrective exercise. And I was saying that when I went and got my continuing education, 2 years into my first research, I met this brilliant now physical therapist based in New York by the name of Brent Brookbush. Big shout out to my mentor and teacher, Dr. Brent Brookbush of the Brookbush Movement Institute. He lit this incredible fire for knowledge, man. When I saw someone for the first time talk about movement as a known body of science and evidence, and not guesswork, but rather assessment, addressing and reassessing, breaking this thing down into a scientific process, I fell in love. Because I was like, wow, I don't have to sit here and guess about what's going to work. I mean, I've seen box jumps help certain people with this problem. Maybe we'll do that. I don't know. Let's try it. Instead, he taught me about this language the body speaks. So learning muscles, their actions, their origins, their insertions, where they originate, which way they move. There are three golden rules of muscles that I teach my students in every class, every group I teach. And I think it helps a lot of people to know this. Some of this is rooted in kinesiology, so I apologize if the jargon gets a little professional, but I'll try and make it as relatable as possible. The three golden rules of muscles, and these are not my rules, these are Brent's rules, Brent Brookbush's, and they've changed my life. They help you understand the nutshell of a kinesiology. And they are that A, muscles only contract and relax. That's all they do. They don't twist, they don't contort, they don't burn the fat on top of them. They only shorten and lengthen. That's the behavior of them. The second rule is that muscles contract best in the direction of their fibers. So if you look at an anatomy diagram, right, you see that person with their hands to their sides in the anatomical position, you might notice that the illustrator has lines facing a certain direction. Those lines aren't there just for decoration and to make it look pretty. They are there to show you, yeah, that when this muscle contracts, which way is it going? Now, all muscles contract in the direction of their origin, typically toward the core. So that way, if you are not a kinesiology person, you don't have to be a professional. You can look at a diagram and look at the muscles and be like, huh, when this contracts, it'll take me this way. This is transverse flexion. If you look at the pecs, the fibers are oriented toward the sternum to cause this motion, right? And the same thing throughout every muscle in the body. And the third golden rule is muscles only affect the joints they cross. So if you start to look at muscles as these puppet strings that animate us, going back to those kinematics and kinetics I was talking about, the movement and the forces behind those movement, you can start to understand how our body exists under force. And we're always under gravity, right? So as long as we exist in gravity, maladaptations will take place. As long as we have day-to-days and habits, maladaptations will take place. So that was the big eureka moment for me. That turned on the switch.
That, just that formula right there.
Yeah. Understanding that there is a recipe, a behavior to these things. You know, when you first look under the hood of a car, you're just looking at parts. I mean, you know, I know so much about
bonds. You don't understand the functionality behind it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Only a mechanic would.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you in a sense, are a mechanic of muscles?
Absolutely.
And joints?
Absolutely. No, understanding the parts of the machine I work with. That's what it is.
A well-oiled machine.
Exactly. Exactly. If you took your car over to the mechanic and you're like, hey, I got a problem with my radiator or my head gasket. And they're like, what's that? That's a problem, right? You're like, oh, never mind, bro. I got to go. Right? Exactly.
Like if you come to the barbershop and you be like, hey, I need a taper. And then the barber's like, what's that?
Definitely. Exactly.
The red flag.
Yeah.
Or if you ask your girl, do you know what head is? And she's like, what's that? Walk away, guys. Walk away. She doesn't know what she needs to use that mouth before, besides just talking back to you.
Unless she says, oh, you're talking about throat. Okay. Then we're like, all right, never mind, come back in. Oh, like, damn, you want a whole nother level?
Just to make it, you know, English for people.
Exactly, making it relatable throughout right. all avenues. But yeah, man, that was the big switch for me, was learning this, that this world exists and that there are parts to a whole. You don't have to just look at one person's set of dysfunctions and begin with a shot in the dark. This, if I have one thing y'all take away from today, it is you should understand that any good movement specialist, personal trainer, strength coach, physical therapist, chiropractor, doesn't matter who your movement specialist is, should begin with thorough and comprehensive assessments. If they are not assessing, they are guessing. Period. Right? They have to. I could. Yeah, that's a mic drop right there. Exactly. I'm just gonna go run a victory lap after that one.
So they gotta assess the way that your body functions.
Absolutely. Without that observation, we are truly just guessing. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, there are. We're prone to a lot of the same patterns.
So what are the things that you would assess?
Like, great question. So for example, one thing that I might do is check. So when I first met Enzo, Enzo's telling me he's got trouble with his shoulder. Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand that. And understanding the way that he probably moves through his day-to-days as for someone who understands kinesiology, mm-hmm. I can say, oh, this is someone who, you know, stands on his feet, probably has his right shoulder shrugged as he's using his cutting hand, that kind of stuff. I now am going to test those movements' range of motion. So I'll lie him down on a table and look at his external rotation. Now, we know, thanks to years of research and many smart people who have done all the work for us, we know that the shoulder in external rotation should have about 90 degrees. The shoulder in internal rotation should be about 60 degrees. The hip flexor should reach about 140 degrees. Hip extension is about 10 to 15 degrees. These things are well known and documented in a healthy skeleton, in a healthy body. So if you are deficient in those markers, that now shows me that the muscles responsible for that joint action are restricted in their function. Now I have somewhere.
So now they've taken another malform, basically.
Absolutely. Exactly. A maladaptation mm-hmm. or a muscular imbalance has occurred. So one common thing, for example, is many people lack what's called dorsiflexion, which is the opposite of a calf raise. So if this is your foot, a calf raise is called plantar flexion. The opposite is dorsiflexion. Most people really struggle to bring their ankle toes to your nose, basically, mm-hmm. right? In a healthy individual, we should see about 0 to 10 degrees of positive dorsiflexion.
So am I healthy?
Most people. So I would be able to evaluate you if you lied on a table, like you will maybe on your next session. We could tell because I would have to make sure it's non-compensatory. Because a lot of people can be like, "Oh yeah, I can do it," but not realizing they're actually deflecting into, for example, eversion.
So just to piggyback off something my cousin said yesterday is that what did you notice at the gym, bro? We were talking about it, and then I told you we were going to have him on there, and then you said that it's interesting that what he does, because now you're noticing at the gym how people, they stand.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Pretty much, like, I've noticed nobody really stands, like, perfectly. Yeah. Either somebody's, like, on one side.
Yeah. Or, like, oof. Yeah.
Thing, you know?
Yeah, well
said. So my cousin wants to go to the gym and be like, hey, bro, can I give you a tip?
He's about to be that dude, right? Yeah,
tell you something. Your hips are kind of fucking... Like, if I could just... right.
And let me chime in on a quick note.
Hey, you go up to his girl and shit, he's looking at you like, what the fuck?
You know, because you do get the motherfuckers that, like, walk up to you. They don't even look like they train legs, and they're trying to correct your girlfriend's squat form. And like, motherfucker, like, get out of here, bro. You skip leg day. You trying to tell my girl how to squat. I know what you up to. let me chime in with something real quickly before I get into what's going on with that phenomenon. Because once you see that, you can't unsee it.
Right.
Right. It's right. Kind of like it's a very real
He's
thing.
Like, you ruined me.
Absolutely.
Nah, he kind of ruined it for me because I was like, nah, I thought about you and I was like, I need to start noticing people.
Listen to me. Ignorance is motherfucking bliss. Right. Because once you start assessing movement, mm-hmm. you never stop. It's always Disneyland up in here. I'm watching people walk and move and reach for things. And I'm always I can't shut it off. It's kind of like when you first learn to read nutrition labels. It's going to change your life. From now on, everything you eat, you're going to be thinking about how many calories are in there, right? Maybe to varying degrees, it might not drive you crazy, but this is why some people get very perfectionist about it, right? Good habits can become very bad habits or psychological havoc on you,
right,
by way of perfectionism and obsession. I've been there before too. When I first started running, trying to lose weight, I became obsessed. I wouldn't eat anything I didn't cook.
That's what gym bros go through.
Right? Yeah, exactly. This is a very real thing. People will masquerade behind fitness. They will hide disease and illness behind a show of fitness, right? People who are obsessed with having 3% body fat and looking chiseled all day long are covering, right? If they're trying to do that year long, that's dysfunctional. That's not sustainable. It's not good for your heart. It's not good for your endocrine panel, right? Your testosterone will plummet. Your bone health will plummet.
Because you plateau also in there?
Yeah, absolutely. And you will cause plateaus. Yeah, for many people. It's just not sustainable. So going back to that whole thing of noticing a lot of people being asymmetrical, the truth is we're all asymmetrical, right? And believe it or not, our body is very well fashioned to handle asymmetry. And there is actually a division in the school of thought of if somebody's asymmetrical but doesn't have any pain or discomfort, is it a problem? And that's a fair question, right? It is fair to say, like, sure, if you have rounded shoulders and forward heads, but you're as, you know, functional as can be, you can still reach overhead and do your bench presses and talk your bullshit, and you don't have problems with, you know, slap lesions and tension headaches and all those other pathologies that come in with that type of posture, is it a problem? Because our body is very good at handling asymmetry. And that's, there is no answer to yes or no. It really depends on what you believe, right? If you want to go through your life with one shoulder sitting higher than the other, but it doesn't bother you, that's your prerogative, right? And so I was like, shit, you call me out?
Yeah, real quick. He's like, I'm working on your shoulders every week just for you to sit down all fucked up, man.
But the thing is that we do know that these postural imbalances at one point or another will lead to injury or breakdown, right? Those altered forces, we call these altered arthrokinematics. The movement of the joint changes. It no longer moves the same way somebody else's or the common, the normal shoulder, quote unquote, should, right? For example, the shoulder has this propensity to translate anteriorly forward and superiorly higher. So it sits forward and up in the socket, right? And in these people, they'll get that pinching sensation in near their anterior
deltoid.
Just
say deltoid. Enzo. Just say
yeah. Enzo's like, I know you talk about me.
That's what I felt. That's what
and
I
yeah, learned. That's precisely what's that going on in your body. Crazy, absolutely. Yeah. And it's extremely common.
Right.
It's a common thing in pitchers. It's a common thing in people who do overhead sports. We tend to see these types of injuries very commonly, or these types of situations very commonly. The problem is that that position predisposes you to a higher risk of things like shoulder impingement, which is where, like, you know, you ever see people who are like, oh, I can't take my shoulder higher than that.
Frozen shoulder,
that kind of stuff. Exactly.
They usually get shots.
Yeah, totally, man. Like, you know, and these people have a hard time going through their day-to-day actions. Mm-hmm. So eventually it catches up to you, right? Or might catch up to you. Sure, there are some people who have gone through their whole lives with an asymmetry and never really cared for it and never really had any symptoms from it. This also happens, right? Tension serves a purpose. Again, your body is maladapting to make your repetitive activities easier.
And sometimes that's detriment to your... I feel like sometimes if you keep in that same shape or form, whatever you're doing,
yeah,
it eventually is going to be a detriment in the long run.
Yeah.
Then it's almost like what you're saying, that maladaptability, it's adapting to the wrong side of things instead of, because even in the way you taught me how to stand, and I know that's probably what you get from seeing my Instagram and seeing my videos that I post, because then you see me working, you know what I'm saying? And you can pause it sometimes and see, and then I'm like, because I've wondered, I was like, how does he know how I'm standing?
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh shit, Instagram.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
You know, but then it's like,
I see
this as
here, like,
you see it?
It's the same pose.
For me cutting hair?
When you post for your picture.
He's like, that's my good side.
Ask the photographer. He knows the pose. See, this guy did not watch. He's clearly not liking my pictures on Instagram. No, that's not. He's watching my reels. You're watching my pictures. That's what I'm saying. But anywho.
Think about how many times it takes take to get that picture? So you're standing there.
That's all I'm asking you. Ask Aries. You know, my pose is on point, right? I'm a model. You just need to work on the jizzle chaw line. That's what I'm really working on. You need to get that thing for your mouth. Yes.
That's right.
Short for us, short people. That's what we need to do. Create 5'5".
I love this. Ooh. And he's like, no, it doesn't. He's like, bad posture.
No,
I'm not trying to rain on nobody parade.
Mind body connect, and I stretch my body, and it stretches.
Absolutely.
Nah, imagine. No, I wish it was really like, because it's a mental thing in that sense, but like, I wish everybody took a session from this guy.
Honestly. I appreciate just like, that, man.
It's been a difference in what I've noticed. And then even just like the energy that you display, you know what I'm saying?
I appreciate
it's like,
it helps thank a you lot, for saying. You know? Thank because, you for saying. One of the things I've learned is that, again, going back to that whole idea of we all have bodies, some people are better at moving it, right? One of the things that I've learned is that through the knowledge that I've spent years and years and years and years of my life learning is that I can give you a better command over your body while you're in that captain's chair. As long as you're alive, you're controlling your body. Hopefully, right? As long as you're healthy and alive. And that idea becomes that if we can give you good cues, if we can give you a better way to connect to something, it does help a lot with the quality of movement. And what I found out is the power of cueing. This has been the new evolutionary arc in my journey as a professional. When I went from not knowing and just trying random things to understanding the assessment process and then understanding muscular behavior and patterns, now the big journey in my practice has become the power of cueing. It really is much stronger than I ever gave it credit for. When I tell you, imagine your ribs getting longer, imagine your shoulders dropping from your ears, imagine that, you know, whatever it might be, I will paint visuals or give examples.
And it's so fucking powerful it's how you do that
crazy.
Because I feel like there's a lot of people that they're mental and like they don't have that inner voice, right?
Yeah.
And like if you say something, my inner voice captures what you say and it yep. just kind of paints a picture in my mind for yeah. me to follow through.
Absolutely.
And then I've heard that there's people out there that don't have that inner voice that tells them follow through or do what you're exactly. hearing, you know? Just so it's like for me at least to hear to feel for one like, oh shit, I feel tension where he's pressing.
Yes.
And then you're breathing. It's almost like when you're working out and you're like taking deep breaths through each rep, right? And you feel pressure on that muscle. You got to breathe too because it's going to get uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
And for it to get soothing, then he says something that cues you to like relax the muscle or even like release the muscle. Because sometimes you're there sitting on the table. I mean, laying down on the table and you're tense as fuck and you don't even yeah. realize it.
Yeah.
You're just like, what the fuck?
Because the natural reaction is that when they touch the area that's affected is you want to tense up.
Yeah.
And the hardest part is to relax.
Imagine being relaxed because like, bro, it sets the atmosphere like with chill music and everything, you know? And like, you're already relaxed. But you don't realize how your body is so up. It's like we talked about it one time where it's like your body, your muscles are like parts of armor and they're just stiff now.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And then when he comes in, he's like loosening up all those.
Yep.
All those fibers so that it's not stiff because
that's when you see an armor of a knight, you don't see like all chiseled up just opening.
Exactly.
Yeah, well said. Well said. Exactly.
Because if it was like that, he'd be stiff as fuck. He wouldn't be having no mobility.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Are you guys familiar with a term called the gate control theory?
No, I'm not.
So the gate control theory, it's going to sound very familiar once I describe it. It's that, you know how sometimes you'll notice like, damn, why am I elbow stinging? And then you look and you notice that it's bloody and you're like, whoa, wait a minute. Now all of a sudden you can't stop feeling that stinging, right? So,
You don't realize it until you see it. Like there's so many times you get paper cuts, you never felt it, and then later, hours
as soon
later,
as that water
absolutely.
Then as soon as you saw it, all the pain.
Absolutely. Yeah. And your nervous system is divided into many different subdivisions. You have your central nervous system, your peripheral nervous system, your somatic system. You have your autonomic nervous system. It goes on and on. There's a number of subsystems. So what this delicate balance is that your spine basically modulates the information that reaches your brain, right? And it tries to do its best job to not overwhelm your brain with a ton of stimulus. If something is minor and it decides, hey, this isn't going to hurt us. This is, you know, a little minor scratch, right? It's not going to let that information reach your brain. But then when your brain sees it and it knows it's there, now all of a sudden you feel that itching, that burning, that cut sensation nonstop because
that's like your toe, like on a hard piece of
Surface. And that's an extremely, that's an overwhelming stimulus, right? That's going to go straight to your head because you're like, oh my God, that hurt, right? So typically it depends on the intensity of the stimulus. So the reason I bring this up is what you described there about you didn't even know you were tight in certain places.
My fucking hips was crazy.
Crazy tight. Your calves, like, right? How doing, insane. Bro? Exactly. It's like, damn, like, I feel that everywhere.
Like, and then like, just breathe. And I'm like, all right. And
100%.
Like, stretch your leg. And like, I'm like, it's like a metaphorical stretch of leg. It's not 100%. Like, because it's like, make it longer.
Yes.
Even though you know your leg's not going to go longer because I'm fucking 5'5", right?
Right.
So I'm like, question, but it just stretches and the muscle just...
It's like, what would you say is the difference between what you do and then like a massage therapist or even a chiropractor? Yes.
Great question. So there is... it's sort of one of those things that, where do I begin? There is a number of things that divide these practices. But honestly, one chiropractor to the next chiropractor may also be very different. One physical therapist to the next physical therapist may be very different.
They have the knowledge you have.
Absolutely.
They just entered that field through that chiropractic care.
100%.
Physical therapy or whatever. Right?
Exactly. And if my, you know, even if there's a title of corrective exercise specialist, you go to one to the next, they may use vastly different techniques. So there is definitely this sort of eclectic, holistic approach that I take, that of using a number of evidence-based techniques and sort of amalgamating them together into an effective intervention.
And based what you learn on with your mentor too, right?
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. Combining what he taught me with more and more information that I've learned over the years.
Questions, just to wrap it up. Have you ever dealt with a personal injury yourself that you've had to care for yourself and what you know and everything? Like,
knock on Mike. I've been lucky enough to not deal with any major injuries.
Dope.
But I have had minor injuries before. About a year and a half ago, I threw my back out on a very light deadlift. I was just warming up and I came in tight as I'd been teaching all day. And you know, it was a very comfortable weight for me, about 300 some pounds. And I'm just lifting it for a few reps. And then on one of the reps, I lock out and I was like, what was that, a pop? What was that? And I set it down. Then you start getting that blowtorch effect of pain. Like, you start feeling it settle in. And
feel
like,
that warmness.
Exactly.
And it spreads.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, this is radiating. This is not good. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Absolutely. This is a common sort of sensation of feeling like a pop, a crack.
How'd you alleviate that pain? Or
so I did what any athlete would do, and I tried to ignore it. And I put on another plate, and I went to the next set, and I picked that up, and that's when it hurt.
Did I deal with that the Indian way, bro? What my parents do to me, bro.
What do they do?
Well, it's a weird ass method, but what they do is they put alcohol in a cup, put the cup, and let the suction and get that air out.
Oh, wow.
So, that's, you see, cupping.
Yeah, no kidding, literally. To address a problem head on takes wisdom. Most people, when they experience pain, what's the first thing they do?
Avoid,
ignore, hope it goes away. Yeah, mm-hmm. They'll self-medicate with ignorance. Just be like, all right, I'm just going to wish this thing goes away. Exactly.
They do the placebo thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, they just try to will it away. And that's a problem because typically that it will evolve into a larger issue.
Yeah, and only my parents, both of them are from their countries, they're from the farmlands.
Yeah.
So like they learn that type of stuff just because survival.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you need ways to be able to continue doing the work. Yeah, get around it. And there are short-term fixes and long-term fixes. So going back to the question of like what divides one person, one practitioner to the next, honestly, it's their own journey, right? Although scope of practice really matters. One of the reasons I love California is that it has a very lax scope of practice. We encourage holistic healing here, trying and amalgamating, again, different techniques and bringing them together into this cumulative intervention that helps to address different pillars of what causes dysfunction. And I think that's one of the things that I can say sets my practice apart from some of my fellow trainers is I've had the privilege of learning techniques from some very brilliant minds. You know, I give very little credit to myself, maybe less than I deserve. Because all I'm doing is standing on the shoulders of giants. Truly, all these people who have paved the way, who have done years of grueling research, seeing hundreds, if not thousands of patients, writing and publishing evidence to show what works, what doesn't, and what sometimes works. And all I do is read. That's it. Bring it together and find something.
Here's a question that I have just to close it in.
Please.
sleep? How does that factor in sleep posture?
Wow. What a great question. If I, oh my gosh, man. Last week alone, I probably talked to half a dozen people about sleep posture alone. It is such, because that's the one time we can't really control it. What's that?
Is it the bed?
It can be. It certainly can be. The quality of your pillow, the quality of your mattress, the height of your pillow, whether you're a side sleeper, a belly sleeper, a back sleeper, all of these things are variables we have to try and understand. What'd you say?
He said a crazy sleeper.
A crazy sleeper, he's exactly. The one
in like a queen size bed just rolling over left, right, right there.
Yeah, only in a queen size like bed, my boy.
Yo, you're in a queen. Don't lie, bro. It's a queen size.
No, some people sleep like the dead. Other people are very light sleepers, and even that can be an advantage.
And some people
advantage.
Sleep with kids.
Yeah, exactly. I'll tell you,
corner
man.
Of a bed and shit.
Exactly. Yeah, you got a pet or a child or something like that. They'll corner you off, and you got to work with the real estate you got available. Right. So sleep posture is a really pervasive part of trying to get out of dysfunction. It will chase and nip at your heels because even if you're aware of all the things, like I can tell Enzo all day, like, "Yo, man, lean into." Your left heel, your right pinky toe, and I want you thinking about your hips like this. You know, a million cues, but all of that is fair game for his dysfunction to reclaim when he's sleeping.
Because I've also heard that, like, for example, people who are belly sleepers, and then they lift the leg.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I've heard that that can realign your whole spine.
Yeah, it's really interesting how sleeping on your belly or having one hip popped out one way or another can do a lot to either put you into or pull you out of dysfunction. The problem is that most people are going to lean into dysfunction. Your body enjoys the path of least resistance. This is something called relative flexibility. Relative flexibility is, again, the path of least resistance to get to the desired movement. Thanks. So when you sleep and when you're resting, you're going to probably follow the path of least resistance. So you're going to lean into your dysfunction. I'll give you a great example. I tend to lean very heavily toward my left. I do this from years of writing as a teacher, right? On a whiteboard of like being overhead and also being a gamer. I grew up like PC gaming. So I would have my mouse hand like this, my keyboard hand in the back. So I would always be leaning to my left. And I had this whole set of dysfunctions all the way from my ankles up to my neck. And when I sleep, when I hit the bed, I'm sleeping like this. And it took me so long to realize that I'm not even lying down straight. So sleep posture is it's perhaps the largest adversary we face, aside from maybe work posture, that we have to get out of.
Right, right. Yeah. And real quick to wrap us up, what are some of the things that you would give people pointers with as far as like either working out or like you said, work posture, sleep posture? What are some things that just vague that, you know, you're not seeing people right now on the spot, but something that you like give the world knowledge to just wrap it up real quick.
Absolutely. So a few closing thoughts. The assessment process, going back to that, like I said, that is the one thing to take away from this. You don't always need a professional to assess you, although I strongly encourage it. You can self-assess. Record yourself doing squats. It's recording and tripods in the gym have started to get like a little bit of a bad rap. Like people are like, oh man, there's another, you know, shitty broccoli head influencer recording himself for vanity. No, someone might be recording themselves for technique. I record my lifts all the time, and it's part of the reason I've become consistent.
You just fucking watch it.
Absolutely.
Study how your posture is.
Absolutely. I really only.
I never thought about it. I thought.
You gotta work on so you won't fuck it up even more.
100%. How do you know what you're doing if you're not looking at what you're doing, right?
Boneheads. And what if you post it?
Yeah. And what if you post it? Vanity is a powerful motivator. If that's what motivates you into the Mamba fucking mentality is your vanity, do it, man. Like if vanity gets lambasted as being shallow, that's not true. There are times where people, you can tell someone they're diabetic. You can tell someone that they got high cholesterol. But if you tell someone, hey man, you keep eating the way you do, you're going to lose your abs. They'll be like, oh shit, let me get serious now. You know, because vanity can motivate.
Right.
So the takeaways, the key takeaways, assess. Whether it's yourself, there are two forms of observation, internal feedback and external feedback. Record yourself. Look at yourself in a mirror while doing your work. Look at the quality of your movement. Or point number two to take away is hire a trainer. Everybody needs a trainer. Trainers need trainers. The most brilliant minds in fitness and exercise and physical therapy need physical therapists and trainers. You cannot do it all yourself. If I think I can watch my own form while I'm doing a top level squat at my highest intensity, I'm delusional. I need a coach to help me watch and critique that. Or I can record it, watch it back, and pick up what I can. But a fresh eye helps. So those are my big two takeaways, is get into the assessment process. Don't rely on guessing. There is a way to figure out what it is that's causing you problems or inefficiency in your movement. And secondly, consult a professional. It does help. This is why they're there. And you know, be skeptical of your professionals. There are a lot of knuckleheads, unfortunately, in the fitness and health industry. There are a lot of rinky-dink phony certifications. There are sort of weekend personal trainer certifications. You can go online and do an online course on the weekend that has like a 30%, you know, score to pass.
So it's like a pastor getting a marriage license?
Yeah, exactly, man. Like literally anybody can do it if they try to do it. You know what I'm saying?
It's online.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's online.
Biden has a question for you. Real quick, what you got, bro?
So my question for you, bro, is after somebody has a session with you, like per se, like Enzo, for example, who has his shoulder injury, after for a while for his sessions, what are the probabilities of the injury occurring? Or
another great question. No. Yeah, I love this. This is actually a question I love when people ask me during the consultation process, is, hey man, like after I work with you, because you know, the best professionals are not inexpensive. It is an investment. And ultimately you get what you pay for. If you hire a cheaper, crappier trainer, you might not get the best bang for your buck. So this is a great question to ask, is what exactly should I expect after my session? In our field, we chase progress, not perfection, right? We don't expect to make a decade of dysfunction disappear in a couple of sessions, but it does happen. There have been many times where I've had people be, you know, dealing with back pain for 6 years. And then all of a sudden, one session on my table, they're like, oh my God, I haven't felt, what's going on here? I can move again. I've been able to do this. It's incredible. So when people finish a session, relapse into dysfunction does happen. Mm-hmm. One of the most important things you mentioned, Enzo, was that you didn't even know you were tight in those spots, like your hips, right? When someone, this is why I brought up the gait control theory. I'll wrap this up. The gait control theory and stuff, tension creeps in. It's a steady process. And eventually it hits a ceiling where pain manifests. And then you typically, again, will ignore it for a little longer. And then you go seek help. So now we have to take all these steps backwards. And pain is a very unreliable marker of what's actually happening. People will have neck pain due to hip or ankle dysfunction.
That's crazy.
And I'm not exaggerating. This is the least hyperbolic statement I've said all night tonight. It is very, very real. Everything in your body is contingent on movement elsewhere. This is what we call the kinetic chain. And just like a chain and a link, if you rattle one link, the rest of the chain is going to move. So after a session, there is often relapse. But with progressive sessions, as we not only break up tough tissue that has maladaptively shortened, not only are we giving these people cues each time, every time Enzo comes in for an appointment, you learn something new, right? Something else you can add to the positive cup of water and pour out of that negative repetitive stress cup. And that leads to progress, which hopefully eventually will reach that very esoteric metaphysical thing we call perfection.
And then I feel like we also have those sessions where, like, maybe a couple weeks ago, like, the mind and body couldn't connect because I would have dealing with a stuffy nose and I was like stuffed up I feel like every 10 minutes I was like pineapples. And then the next week when I cleared up from the congestion, like, man, did I need that fucking deep tissue, bro.
Absolutely.
And I was like, just, you were even surprised, like, bro, it's probably the best session we had.
We had a great one the other day. Exactly. And the one before that was rough.
Right. Yeah. It was. It, like, fucking said, hurt. And yeah, exactly. Right after I came back from El Salvador.
Exactly. And I noticed that the person's level of fatigue and exhaustion plays a big role in how effective the intervention is. you weren't the only person to have that type of experience last week of coming in and feeling like, or the week before, coming in and feeling like, man, I just, everything hurts today. All of this feels very bruisey and right. I feel tired. Yeah, you have to be in a place to receive the work, right? Nice. And that's very true. Ultimately, you could be learning from the most educated brains on this planet, but if you're not listening, if your body, in this case, for example, is not listening, it's not going to receive the positivity. So yeah, there is this aspect of results are dependent on the patient. It is end user.
It's almost like oriented. The student.
Yeah.
As far as the student wants to go is how far he'll take
you. You get what you put in. Yeah, exactly. You come to class prepared with your homework and you show up on time and you're ready to listen. You're going to get a lot more bang for that buck as opposed to that person coming in last second.
So we're going to wrap this up. Mo, where can they find you?
Absolutely, man. So you guys can find me on Instagram at Big Mana, M-A-N-A, Mo. That's Big Mana Mo. Or on TikTok or Twitch, especially tech out my Twitch, guys. I live stream all my workouts. I stay dropping this sauce nonstop for 2 to 3 hour streams while we're bending some good god honest heavy motherfucking metal. So if you want to check that out, it's Twitch and TikTok at Big Mana. That's B-I-G-B-I-G-M-A-N-A. See y'all there.
Appreciate you, bro. Y'all got anything else? Y'all good?
Thank you for joining the current podcast.
Guys, thank you so much. Woo!